It's dark and cold and windy.
Sweden.
Huh?
It's like Sweden.
Yeah. And this is nice and warm. No, I'm not. I've got layers on. Yeah. It's nice and warm.
Sarvani Sarvam Brahma Upanishadam Maham Brahma Nirakuryam Mama Brahma Nirakarot Anirakaranam Asvanirakaranam Astu Tadatmani Nirate Ya Upanishad Sudharmaste Mai Santu Te Mai Santu. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Let's chant verse 5 and 6. And have your thing? Here, you can have mine.
Oh,
yeah. No, look, give her that one, because I've got writing on it. I'll use this one. I wanted to use my book in.
Sure, I just found it.
You did?
Yeah.
Okay. So cute. Okay. Atta adjatmam. Atta adjatmam. Yaretad gachati vacha.
Yaretad gachati vacha.
Manonena.
Manonena.
Chaitad upasam harati. Oops, sorry. I always say that wrong. Chaitad upasmarati.
Chaitad upasmarati
abhikshnam sankalpaha
abhikshnam sankalpaha
tadha tadvanam nama
tadha tadvanam nama.
It's actually, if we put the sandhi, it'd be tadha tadvanam nama
tadha tadvanam nama
tadvanam iti
tadvanam iti
Upasitavyam.
Upasitavyam.
Saya etad evam.
Saya etad evam.
Abhihainam.
Abhihainam.
Sarvani bhutani.
Sarvani bhutani.
Samvanchanti.
Samvanchanti.
Tadda. It's repeat. Oh, tadha, tadha, breaking the sandhi. Tadha, tat vanam. In fact, let's go back to the beginning. Tat, tat ha, tat ha, tat vanam. Nama, tat vanam iti.
Tat vanam iti.
Upasitavyam.
Upasitavyam.
Saha yaha
Etat evam.
Veda abhi.
Ha enam.
Sarvani bhutani.
Samvanchanti.
Okay.
One little Sanskrit thing to mention for those of you who are involved in the Sanskrit at this point. You see where it says Veda abhi? Mm-hmm. And then the verb is samvanchanti at the end. Samvanchanti. Everybody see mm-hmm. that?
Yeah.
Okay. In Vedic Sanskrit, sometimes what they call the upasarga means a little preposition that goes in front of verbs. Abhi is a preposition. It's called an upasarga. Like, for instance, if I said gachati would be the verb, but what if I said abhi gachati? That abhi kind of changes the meaning often of the verb. Sometimes it just accentuates the meaning, but often these upasargas will actually change the meaning. And so in classical Sanskrit, these upasargas, these little words like abhi gachati, or whatever, there's like pragachati, there's many, many, there's probably like 15 or 16 different upasargas that modify the meaning of the noun or verb. But in Vedic Sanskrit, sometimes they take the preposition, the upasarga, and put it somewhere else. Like here, Veda abhi, the word, the verb is abhi samvanchanti. And I'm not sure why they do it. Sanskrit's very flexible and everything's done according to either a raga or to a chant, and so maybe they have the freedom to do that. And it's not really a problem because we know that that's a upasarga and it belongs to a verb. It doesn't usually, it's not usually able to just be there by itself. So I just wanted to point that out to you, this little Sanskrit. Because it happens a lot in classical Sanskrit, I mean in Vedic Sanskrit, and when you're learning chants, often the upasarga will be separate from the verb in the chant. So anyway. Tat here is tad brahma, okay, Brahman. So that Brahman, and it's tad ha. Ha means indeed, as is well known. In the commentary it says ha is kila, means kila. Kila is that which is well known, or it gives emphasis. That very Brahman that we've been unfolding, that this Upanishad has been revealing, that very Brahman. Tad vanam nama. That very Brahman that we've been unfolding in the Upanishad is goes by the name of Tadvanam. And Vanam means that which is puja, that which is puja, and since that which is the most worshipful. Also it means that which is the most desired, or the most, sometimes we call it, they'll translate it, and Swamiji also translates it this way, that which is the most adorable, that which is the most adored. And there's a nice little, in the commentary here, he says that Brahman is considered, Brahman goes by the name of Tasya Vanam Tad Vanam. Why that which is most adorable? Because, it says, because of being the Pratyak Atma of all of the pranis, of all of the living beings, it's because it's the innermost self of all living beings, therefore it is the most adorable. Because there's nothing more dear to any given jiva than their own being, than the Atma. And so that word, because Brahman is the self of all of the beings, therefore it is called Tadvanam. It's called that which is the most adored, the most adorable. Vananiyam samvajaniyam means the most adored, the most worshipful. The most adored, the most worshipful. But it has that sense of adoration and love. The most loved, you can say. That would be good also for them. That which is the most dear, the most loved, the most adorable. So now it says, so that Brahman, which is being unfolded by the Upanishad, is often called Tadvanam, that which is the dearest of all beings, of all of the pranis. Among Tad means like Tesham in the 6-3, among all of the pranis, among all of the living beings, that which is the most dear. I think it's so beautiful. Anyway. So then it says, So, that being so, tedvanam iti, this tedvanam, that which is the most dear of all beings, upasitavyam, that is to be meditated upon. And here, we'll see in a minute, let me just finish this and then I'll go to each word. That is to be meditated on. That is to be something which we do upasana on. But we'll see what the upasana is for the mumukshu or for the upasika, the one who does visualizations. We'll see what that kind of upasana is and what that upasana would look like for the jivanmukta. So that iti tedvanam upasitavyam, that one is to be contemplated on, or one should do upasana upon. That Brahman, which is the most adorable. Because why should it be done? Saha eva etad evam veda. It says, the one who knows etad, this Brahman, in this way, is that which is the most dear. The one who realizes that, who knows that, the one who is the most dear. Then what? Abhi ha enam sarvani bhutani sambhanchanti. So that would be ha enam sarvani bhutani abhivanchanti. The subject of this sentence is sarvani bhutani. That means sarva is all, bhuta is being. So all the living, all the pranas, all of the living beings, sambhanchanti, they desire to be near that person. They want to be with that person. So one should meditate upon Brahman in the form of tedvanam, that one who's much most dear. Indeed, those who know Brahman, recognize Brahman in this, you know Brahman in this manner, for that person, all beings want to be near that person. It's like a praise and a pola. This is the pola that you get. If you recognize Ishvara, if you contemplate upon Ishvara as tedvanam, that which is the most dear to all beings, those who know Brahman in that way, they become for all beings that which is most desirable. Most desirable means I want to be with you. I want to be near you. I want to be around you. Reason for that, before I really begin the unfoldment, is that when we worship Brahman as Ishvara in that way, this jiva upadi, right, is Ishvara. There's nothing in between. Once you recognize yourself as Ishvara, this body, mind, sense organs is nothing but Ishvara. And so your body, even though it's a limited upadi, the self is the self is the same self as Ishvara, and the mind also has its drishti, or its let me put it this way. It also only wants to be with the self. It only wants to be with Ishvara, and so of course then you will want to be you. People will want to be with you because you are with Ishvara. You are with the one who is the most dear, so there's no fear, there's only strength for you. Okay, so let's take a look. So in reference to this Upanishad, when we're contemplating upon Brahman as that one who is the most dear to all beings, in the light of this Upanishad, because we're using the word upasana, we are recognizing also Brahman as that this entire universe is a manifestation of Brahman. And so in light, when we go back to kind of the beginning of the Upanishad, the problem that the devas had was that they had won their victory with the asuras, and they were so proud of themselves, and they were worshipped and praised by all of the other devas, so they were so happy, so proud of themselves. And then Bhagavan thought, you know, you have to teach them something. And so he did. And so they gained knowledge. And so Swamiji says in his commentary is, now that Indra has really been taught, he has to pass it on to Agni and Vayu and then all the other devas so that they also know. But now that he's been taught, he would be saying now at this point, you know, thank you for all your all your good wishes and all of your praise, but all of that really goes to Bhagavan. All of that belongs really to Bhagavan. You know? And in fact, that's the truth of it, you know. And so it's kind of weird. Say, if you have knowledge, it was kind of weird for all of that praise and the vibhuti and everything to stop with you when you really know that everything about you is Ishwara, you know. The only things that are not Ishwara are the things that we kind of work to get rid of, you know. They're all of like the products of Ajnanam. All of the products of Ajnanam are causing this kind of ruckus, you know. And so those things are dropping off. Now say they're dropped off. Then this body, mind, sense organs is just a manifestation of Ishwara, as is the rest of the creation. Everything about you is not separate from the creation. Even the Ajnanam that we suffer from, that all jivas suffer from, really, even that Ajnanam is not separate from the creation. The jiva srishti, you know, the creations of the jiva, which are all born of Ajnanam, those also have their place. They are a product. They're a karya of the Ajnana Karanam, the Ajnana, which is the cause for that. And so they also, all of our problems, you know, they all also exist within the creation. There's room for them. Where else are they going to exist? They're not going to exist in Brahman, and there's nothing outside of the creation. That means that they are also following the laws of the creation. Everything that you experience actually follows the laws of the creation, even the jiva srishti. But the jiva srishti, in one sense, you know, the creations of the jiva, in one beautiful sense, I have a little bit of Ishwara's vibhuti. Every jiva does. What Ishwara has in a total level, you have in a, what calls an alpa. In a little level, a little bit. You have Ishwara Sarvajna, he's a manifestation of infinite knowledge. You also have knowledge, right? And you also manifest that knowledge. Ishwara's manifestation of knowledge is in the form of the entire infinite creation. Your manifestation of knowledge happens anytime you think of a word. Like say you think tree, boom, there's the tree. On a subtle level, it's like a Hiranyagarbha, the tree comes. If you have an imagination, boom, you think of something you want to visualize, boom, there it is. As you think of it, it is there. That's the manifestation of knowledge. The nama is the knowledge, the rupa is the manifestation. So nama can be there, the nama, the name is the knowledge, can be there in unmanifest condition or in manifest condition. So you have all of these capacities. But we also have, and so we can say that's all jiva srishti. And in that way, your imagination is so, so sacred. There's so much we can do with the imagination. Not just imagining scenes. It's highly creative. Highly creative. Even music, you can, if you're insensitive to sound, you can imagine a whole piece. Beethoven used to, in his mind, he would write the piece as he was thinking it. The whole thing would just come out. It's all imaginal. We have to start looking at this word imagination as Hiranyagarbha. Hiranyagarbha means as the subtle aspect of the creation that comes through us. Like Hiranyagarbha in reference to a musician, you're playing the music, and the music is, you have the skill, the music comes through you. You know, that's all Bhagavan's creation, and you're just tapping into it and it comes through. So we have all of these capacities that are incredible. But now we have to realize that because each one of us, every jiva, suffers from a beginningless ajnanam, also our imagination can take form. The imagination, if we don't use it, it's like the unconscious complexes use it. So in a sense, every feeling, every feeling that you have has an imaginal form. You know, it can produce an imaginal form. And so if it's a feeling or an image, it can have an image. That's why, in terms of your unconscious, if you take in a hurt, like when you're a child, you take in the affect is what is swallowed. But the affect is swallowed along with the little child's experience, which would be mostly a dyad, you know, mom and me, or dad and me, or something like that, or my brother and me, whatever it is. It's the whole thing is taken in. And that's why when we go into those feelings, there can be an imagination that goes with it. An image, imagination, whatever you call it, it's an image that can come with it. And we can go in and have a dialogue with that. These are all Bhagavan's gifts. So we can have the inner dialogue, we can have dreams and nightmares around it, you know, those images can present themselves to you. But we can also use those images. We can actually use your buddhi to go into that unconscious and come into relationship with those hurt parts. You can come in a form as a good mother, or you can take the form of your Ishtadevata. You can bring your Ishtadevata with you, you know. You can all sit around the fire together, you know. Whatever wants to come from those affects, you know, in this healing mode can come. And it comes in terms of affect with imagination, and those affects start to release themselves. So your imagination, which in the past everyone knew this actually and used it, we have to rediscover the incredible healing power of this faculty that you have. Imagination is like a faculty. You know, going on walks with your Ishtadevata, or in the Jungian psychology, they use more of the Greek gods and goddesses, and the anima. Like for a man, the anima is the contrasexual feminine. They will go on a walk with their anima and have a conversation. And we'll go on a walk with our animus, have a conversation. They did that in the Greeks always did that with the gods and goddesses. They didn't think, oh, that's just imagination. That is a subtle level of reality. It's a different reality, but it is there to be experienced, and it has healing capacities. And a lot of wisdom can be gained. You can go into into the depths of your psyche, kind of below, I would say underneath the shadow, all of the shadow traumas that we've gathered as we're living, especially in younger years. You can go to deeper levels where there's so much wisdom. You can invoke a wisdom figure. You can invoke your Ishtadevata. You can invoke Ishwara and have a conversation and ask for advice. What should I do in this situation? Please help me in this situation. And Bhagavan will say this or say that, or your Ishtadevata will say something. It's up to you to decide. You know, because you're in this imaginal realm, it's up to you in the end to decide whether what that Ishtadevata is telling you. You ask it a question, it'll tell you what it thinks. You ask Bhagavan a question, he'll say what he thinks. You can write it all down, and then you think, is that Bhagavan, or is that something else that I don't want to follow? You know, it's so often shocking that you wouldn't have thought of that. But when you hear it, it's perfect. It's what you needed to hear. And so now you're in this type of dialogue, you're in a realm that is not out here. It's not out here, but there's so much wisdom inside. And we're just tapping into that wisdom. You have to decide whether it's wisdom or not. But so often, it's the riches that it gives you and the amount of inner space that it gives you. Swamiji will say, you have a companion. If you have an Ishtadevata, you have a companion. You have someone to walk through life with, you know, who is your support and who knows more than you. Even like in some of the meditations that we've done where you internalize or you invoke your Ishtadevata and then let yourself, say you don't know how to handle a situation. I mean, I think this for me is that just is something really beautiful and sacred. Say a situation is really hard, you don't know how to handle it. Then you just be with yourself and invoke your Ishtadevata. Let your Ishtadevata be you. Just let her, him, just take over your body, just fill your body. And then you're sitting here as her, or as the Ishtadevata. And then imagine the situation. See how she handles it. Because it's really evoking, not something that you don't know. It's just invoking yourself, this body, mind, sense organs, as Ishwara, without all the jiva srishti, without all of the hurts and pains. You know, we tend to often act out of our hurts and pains, or act out of our unconscious complexes. It's as though those overwhelm the buddhi, and the buddhi speaks from the complex. You know, and so by understanding all of these kind of psychodynamics, if you invoke your higher self, or in terms of the upadhi, or you invoke Ishwara, an upadhi of Ishwara, which would be like a particular devata, you're invoking some aspect of Bhagavan, you know, and then you become that and see how Bhagavan would, in your imaginary, handle that situation, you know. Or if you feel like you need some support, you're going into a very hard memory where, say you had a very violent parents, or you were sexually abused, or all of these things that are very tough to be with or to deal with. And when those really hard kind of memories start to come up, you need to deal with them, you can go with your Ishtadevata. You can go into that space with your Ishtadevata, who has the capacity to set things right. Because so much strength, because Ishwara, not so objective, you know, not going wild, so objective, so clear, and, you know, handles the situation on an imaginal level, and gets rid of the monster who's hurting you, gets rid of or does something that separates that nightmare from you, you know, protects you. So you can always have your Ishtadevata with you, you know, on an imaginal level. It's something fabulous to even know that we can do that. But what makes it wonderful is just to see how wonderful that is when you do it. You know? So you can also just, you know, pray, invoke all of Ishwara, just Ishwara the whole. And then you have certain questions, you have certain difficulties, you need some strength. You need the strength that is you. It's not somebody else. In fact, you are Ishwara. On the total, you are Ishwara. The self that you are, this me, this conscious being that I am, it is from me, with my maya, talking just from the standpoint of my being, with my maya, is myself that projects this whole creation. This whole creation is nothing but me. I'm not talking about the jiva. I'm not talking about the agnani who thinks, I am this body, mind, sense, organs, and this is my creation. That was the problem with the devas. They had, Ishwara had to tell them what was really going on there. Okay. So, but say, you know yourself. It's just that there's still things that we have to work through. And so what is the most helpful is that tadvanam, this is how Swamiji talks about it. This tadvanam, recognizing this self that I am as that which is the most beloved of all beings. And it is from this self. Of course, the one who is the most beloved of all beings is the ones that all beings want to be with, right? And so when your self is the most beloved of all beings, then you want to be with that. And also, now you imagine, not imagine, but in the sense of upasana, it's as though an imagination, you recognize this whole creation, whether you're walking around with your eyes open is one thing, or you visualize the whole creation in your mind, right? So that's like an imagination. As this me, you know, is in the form of this whole infinite creation. That's the jnani, because there's no jiva there then. This self that I am, that is your self, that is the self in all beings, it is this self, that is me, the one me that is the self in all beings, from whom this entire infinite universe comes. Which means that, say you're walking around and you see a beautiful flower, that flower is a manifestation of Bhagavan. All of these trees and all of these olives and all of these things, these cork trees, everything we see, it's a manifestation of Ishwara. It's all Ishwara. This body is Ishwara, these clothes are Ishwara, all beings are Ishwara, you're Ishwara, you're Ishwara. There's nothing that is not Ishwara. And so that means that the very being of all of us, which is the most adorable, right? So that which is most adorable manifests in this infinite creation. And so that's what we mean by the we say upasana in this verse. It's upasana. We do upasana on that which is most adorable. So upasana is a different kind of meditation. It's a some form of visualization, upasana. And so as a Hindu in the first portion of the Vedas, one of the things that we will do, there's different types of meditation, but most of those meditations are forms of upasana, where I will be visualizing Ishwar. And some of the upasanas are very detailed visualizations of Ishwar. And I worship Ishwara in that form. So, myself not having knowledge, I become the jiva who is worshiping Bhagavan in this form, and then walking with Ishwara. And so Swamiji will talk about, you know, when we do all of the namas like Achyutaya Namaha, Anantaya Namaha, Chaitanyaya Namaha. We have like 1,001 in the Vishnu Sahasranama. There's so many namas. Each nama, if I say the Vishnu Sahasranama, those are 1,000 names of Vishnu. We always end it with namaha. Namaha takes the dative case. So namaha means my prostrations, my devotion, I bow down to Ishwara in this form. I bow down to Ishwara, who is Achyutaya. Swamiji uses that one, Achyutaya. The one who can never be destroyed, who never perishes, I bow down to Achyutaya. So, Achyutaya Namaha. So, any fears I may have around being destroyed or hurt or perishing, I bow down to the one that is imperishable. So, Swamiji will say, like when we're doing these namas, all of the namas are things which belong to, are natural to Ishwara. And you are Ishwara. So in a sense, they're natural to you also. All of those namas are not away from you. Not really. Not away from who you really are. So when you're bowing down to Ishwara and letting Ishwara be the embodiment of those namas, then you can, with each one, you can pick out, so I'm just saying, you can pick out the ones where your weak spots are, and then use those namas to bow down to invoke them in Ishwara. And then you can walk with Ishwara. It gets rid of the isolation. Ishwara becomes your friend, the one that is always with you, and you are always with Bhagavan. And then sometimes you want to invoke Ishwara as your Ishtadevata. So you're always with your Ishtadevata. You're never isolated. We're not isolated at all, because the one self that I am is the self that you are. This body, mind, sense organs is Ishwara. It's like a wave in the ocean. But this is Ishwara's body. This is Ishwara's book, you know. All of the vibhutis, all of the glories, all of the wonderful things there are all manifestations of Ishwara. Every particularity that we experience is a manifestation of Ishwara. And so say, as we start to do upasana on that, where you visualize this whole creation, a meditation where you visualize the whole creation as Ishwara, and that entire creation includes you. It includes your prarabdha karma. It includes your body, mind, sense organs. So your visualization of Ishwara, that includes you, you know, then you have that visualization, and then who is the self? The self is me. This Atma is me, which is the self of the whole creation, including this particular upadi. Because you put the upadi, your body, mind, sense organs, as part of Ishwara. And so when you visualize Ishwara, then this whole creation, including you, is visualized. And then who are you? You're the self, which is Ishwara. It's not the body, mind, sense organs. The body, mind, sense organs belongs to Ishwara and is taken care of by Bhagavan. And then you, and that Bhagavan is not separate from you. So you can say, well, I don't want to be Bhagavan. I don't want myself to be Bhagavan. I want Bhagavan to include me. Well, Bhagavan does include you, because there's only Bhagavan. There's only Bhagavan. This me, that your mind, this is a beautiful thing, the very self, that your mind has now differentiated itself from and become Mithya, it is this self that is Bhagavan. And so you're never not with Bhagavan. From the standpoint of being with the Atma, which is Brahman, with your own self, you are with Ishwar. You are with Bhagavan. This is Bhagavan's self. As it is yourself and yourself, it is Bhagavan's self. So you're never not with Bhagavan. And then also this body, mind, sense organs belongs to Ishwar. It's part of Ishwar's upadhi. In reality, you can say there is no you, or there is only you. There is no you separate from Ishwara. There is no jiva. The jiva is just a product of ajnanam. Everything that you take to be you, right, is Ishwara. If you take this body, this is my body. This body is part of Ishwara. These are my eyes. These eyes are part of Ishwara. These ears are part of Ishwara. What about my mind? Your mind is part of Ishwara. What about the ahankara? Well, the ahankara is part of Ishwara. It's part of the ajnanam that exists in Ishwara. And it has caused this problem that you're suffering from. But then Ishwara has given us Upanishads to take care of the problem. You know? It's still not away from Ishwara. You'd have to be away outside of time and space. It's not possible. You'd have to be away from the self. That's not possible. And so, say as you do do an upasana on this as a jnani, so therefore it's called nididhyasana, where you recognize and you let this body, mind, sense organs in your prarabdha karma be Ishwara, because that's what it is, you know. If you let it be Ishwara, and you let yourself recognize yourself as the very self of Ishwara and the self of all beings, you know, that which is the most beloved, actually. If you contemplate on that, then the ahankara really starts to thin out. And here, I mean by the ahankara, fear. Like, how am I going to have enough money to do this? Or how am I going to be able to pay my bills? How am I going to be able to do this? Or how am I going to be able to do that, you know? And where's my security? I don't really have enough savings to feel secure. Money is a really, for most of us, money is a wonderful sadhana. Because we all kind of know the stress that it causes. So money is a wonderful sadhana, you know, to practice shraddha. The one who used to, whatever shraddha I have in terms of money, comes from spending these years with Swamiji, who ran all these ashrams on basically nothing. There's some money there now, but when I was with him, like in the 70s and 80s and even in the 90s, he was running all of these ashrams and giving so much money to people as they asked, on a shoestring. We never knew where that money was going to come from. How could we have made so much money and not have any money? And Swamiji says, it'll come. He doesn't even worry about it. He wouldn't worry about it either. And one thing he said, you know, we're doing a good work. It's a good work. Bhagavan will support it. If he doesn't support it, then I'll just go to the Himalayas. If he doesn't want it, then we'll just go to the Himalayas. That's all. It's nothing. Let it come. Let the funds come. You're doing a dharmic work. It's your karma. It's the prarabdha of the ashram. It's the prarabdha of all of those people. Let Bhagavan support it, you know. So that is kind of a hard one for most of us, for especially in the States. We have no safety net at all, it seems like. And so you really have to have shraddha that what you need will come. And so if you believe in what you're doing, you know, if you have a calling, if there's something to be done, Swamiji will say, you do it. You just do it. Let Bhagavan, you know, support you along the way. Just do it. Don't be afraid. And see what happens. If it doesn't work out, then stop doing it. So, okay, maybe Bhagavan doesn't want that. Just go ahead and do. You know? Don't let it stop you. These are all wonderful practices. As you practice these kind of things, that kind of trust, it builds up your shraddha. You know, if we have to break through, we have to break through our fears, you know, because the jiva is from beginningless time, And so it's used to being afraid, you know. It's used to worrying and wondering if things are going to work out for me or if I really have enough money, you know, enough money to handle this or handle that. And I just saw over and over Swamiji not paying any attention to that. He has showed that this is a good work. Bhagavan wants it. If he doesn't, then he'll do something else. But it's a good work. You know? And it was. It was a beautiful work. And he supported so many people and did so many things and gave so much knowledge. And Bhagavan more than supported it. So if we're within our dharma and we do what is to be done, it's our prarabdha karma. It's supported because it's our prarabdha karma. It's not my or your prarabdha karma. It's Ishwara's prarabdha karma. This is the karma that's manifesting now. You have a life. Ishwara has a life in your form. That's how you think, right? This is Ishwara's life in your form. You are Ishwara. Your life is unfolding. Ishwara's life in your form is unfolding. So let's see how he does things. From there, Swamiji goes into... it's another sadhana. Money's a big sadhana. But they're all interconnected. It's just being present to today and doing the things in invoking Ishwara's presence. Puja is very good because it thins out your ego, because when you're doing puja, you're invoking Bhagavan. You're recognizing Bhagavan. It thins out the fear and the ego. So it's beautiful to do that. But every day is another day of Ishwara. It's Ishwara's day, you know. And so now it's a puja, which I think is maybe the most beautiful puja. They're all beautiful. So the most, for me, the most beautiful puja is to do arpanam to this day. It's an off, this day is Ishwara's day. Right? And you're included in Ishwara's day. And so let's be present to this day. You know, it's like, say you're doing a puja, you know, and all the while you're throwing the flowers and whatnot, and, but your mind is, right, your mind is out here doing this and doing that, and imagining and daydreaming or worrying about the past, and you just kind of rotely, you're doing the puja. It's like I can read a book and 3 pages have gone, and my mind is out somewhere there. Okay. You're going to be doing a puja and your mind's just not here. What if this is the puja? What if this is the puja? You know? Your mind may be daydreaming, you know, but what you really want is for your mind to be present to that puja, you know. Even if your mind is in an imaginal space, if you are with that imaginal space, that is a puja. It's only if the imaginal space is out there, you know, going out on its own, and all of a sudden, well, look at what I've been doing over the last 20 minutes, you know, then I want to bring my mind back. But otherwise, it's an upasana. If I'm with that imagination intentionally, that's an upasana because it's Ishwara. Right? It's not, it's exactly what it is Ishwara. It's not somebody else. And so that then becomes my being is Ishwara, the imagination is Ishwara, the inner child work is Ishwara, because I'm present. Even the imagination is Ishwara, but I'm not present to it. Imagination, I mean, you know, we spend so much time worrying about the past and worrying about the future and then regretting the past, and we're just kind of lost in all of these things, creating emotions that become embodied, you know. And so I'm not really here. I'm lost in the imagination, the past, and the future and the past. And maybe that's not the best way to go. Maybe it's much more exciting and beautiful to be here, to use my imagination, to use my memories, you know, but not to have them use me. You know? If I'm using them, I'm with them, that's upasana, it's all Ishwara. So the whole relationship with this creation becomes very, very beautiful and very sacred. And then say, Swamiji touches on this too, and we really have to get his book. It's a requirement. So good, you know. I even thought I should read them, some of these pages. Maybe I'll do that later. Read a little page here and there where I think it's just so amazing that he even wrote some of these things. You know? What was I going to say? Let me think about it. It's important. Oh, I know. It's really for the next verse, but anyway, I want to say a couple of things about it now. A mature, this is, he actually says this. A mature person who is a jnani, or a person who has maturity to be able to gain this knowledge, is simply not somebody that doesn't have an unconscious. Or it's not somebody that doesn't have inner child work or unconscious material that has to be dealt with. That has nothing to do with being a jnani. What it has to do with being a jnani, somebody who knows the self, who knows Ishwara, who understands all this, is they know how to be with those things. I can be with those little ones inside. I know how to be with that pain in a healing way. I know how to be with others in a healing way without a need to, this is his wording, without a need to, I have no need to manipulate anyone or to take advantage of any situation. I can simply be, you know. I love to be with people and to take care, to have compassion. Compassion, he used, and he says in his writing, compassion is just a word he uses for all of the positive attributes like kindness or care or wanting to be helpful, you know. Not in a gooey way, just in a way that's a natural expression of your being. And it's not that there's no problems inside. We have our little ones inside to deal with. We have our traumas and our hurts. That doesn't do anything against our knowledge at all. It's how are we with those parts? Are we with those parts in with compassion, with wanting to help, with wanting to cure, to help, and to make the situation better? And which is the same way we're in the outside. So the way we are with those the little ones inside and the way we are with the little ones outside, it's the same. It should be the same. Why is it different? You know? The little ones inside are also outside from the standpoint of me. The buddhi, say, I take care of and help. And I have compassion for those parts to help them, to help every part to grow and to mature and to be whole and complete. That is just an expression of my knowledge. It is not true to say, I have to get rid of all the little ones, all the little ones inside, or all the complexes or hurts I've been through inside. They really have to go. We have to exhaust all of those. They're impediments to me. They're not impediments at all. They're not impediments. If you are trying to, if you're helpful, if you care, and you're trying to help and look after these parts, just why, what is the difference? Just because they're inside, they're impediments. If because they're inside of me, they're impediments. They have to go away. But if they're outside of me, then I'll be loving. It doesn't make any sense, you know. If there's something I can be with, my buddhi can be with, then there's something that I can be helpful toward. Whether they're in the unconscious, whether they're things my mind is worried about, I can be with that in a helpful way. So there's no impediment there in terms of your knowledge. The impediment would be where I cannot, I don't have that, I have not yet gained the inner space to allow me to be with these parts of myself, which you call the little ones inside. I haven't learned how to be with these inner parts that are in pain or hurting in a compassionate, loving, helpful, caring way. I think the best way is to just think of them as if for your, like you are with your child, you know, or if you don't have a child, how you can, would imagine that you would be with your child, you know, which is so beautiful. Just trying to help, you know, trying to help them to grow into a happy, beautiful, healthy little being. That's the whole heart is only that. Let my little girl or little boy, you know, be safe. Let them be happy. Let them be whole. Let me give them everything they need to grow. That's exactly how we have to be with everything inside. Let me help. Let me do what needs to be done. And we've learned so much in this teaching. And also, and again, when I was reading this little section near the end, I was thinking, wow, Swamiji, he really has understood all this psychology. Oh, it just is so moving. How did he really, he figured all of this out. He came from a place in the 70s when I first knew him, the early 70s. Psychology was just bunk for him. It's not necessary. It's just, you know, dabbling around in the mind or something. He had really not much respect for it at all. But then he learned. He learned that it was necessary. And then he learned so much about it. And then he used it, you know, to help us. And it really, really helped. Really helped. But it's just interesting to see him write about it, how much he really, really understood. And then he used it for us and he taught it to all of us. And it really helps us to take care of all of the issues that we have inside, all of the different kinds of hurts and all of the different kinds of wounds. And we have a lot of those things. Most all of us do, you know. We have different amounts, but we all have it, you know. And so we have those tools to take care of all of that. And it all, you can take it all as really a gift from Bhagavan. It's an expression of Ishwar. These things exist. Psychology came into being only 2 centuries ago. And it came into being because it was really necessary. You know, because we were in trouble. So psychology came, and of course it was just gobbled up right away. And so, you know, it spread out and it becomes useful to us as we need it. It's a knowledge base that's there, and we just need it to take care of the antakarana, into the unconscious. So we have that. We have these things. They're meant to be used. They're all sadhanas that we have available to heal our pains. It's another thing. It's just really a puja to Ishwar to just see how many backup systems we have. Like, okay, we were very hurt when we were young in this way and that way. It's very damaging in some ways and has caused us a lot of pain, especially some more than others, a lot of pain. But Bhagavan has given us backup systems where those little girls and little boys, they can be healed. They can grow up and join into your own libido, your own psychic energy. They're released into your own psyche and you have that energy back. You get it back. And the little girl and little boy that were thwarted because of trauma and because of harshness, and all of the abuse and whatnot, they can grow up and be fine, and they just join back into your conscious mind. You can feel all of that energy coming back, and those parts of you just joining, growing up and becoming you now. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. It's a backup system. So Ishwar is smart, infinite knowledge. If you have this problem, we can fix it. Don't worry, we can fix it. There's ways to fix it. Don't worry, it's beautiful. So much of really your nishtha in this knowledge is that love for Bhagavan. And the love for Bhagavan is the love for your own being. That you are that. Yourself is Ishwara. This me, the me that you are, just imagine what this means. This me that is so beloved to you, this self is the one from whom the entire infinite creation has come. The creation is an expression of the self. So it's not unknown to you. It's yours. You know. And so at the more we, that's why this nididhyasana and this upasana on this self, is this is an expression of myself, is so important for your own nishtha. Because then all of this that I, and everyone in my life belongs to me. This is my little piece of Bhagavan, and I'm included in it. Right? We're all included in this space together. Right? This whole thing is Ishwara, and we're like the little cells that are part and parcel. So everybody's very important here in terms of who we are. It's an amazing, amazing thing. We have to contemplate on it, you know, and do nididhyasana myself and start to really cherish the little ones inside and know that they're important, and let them actually resolve into the conscious mind, which is what happens. All of that pain releases, and the part that's been kind of sequestered, when it's totally released, that energy comes back into your own buddhi with more energy and more. It's like a little, it's like homeopathy. It's like that little part of yourself joins back into your own conscious psyche. It's very beautiful. So, in a way, we've got two or three more verses left. You know, something like that. In a way, this is the end of the Upanishad, but then, as we'll see, and tomorrow, the student asks the teacher, comes to the teacher and says, old teacher, could you please teach me the Upanishad? So that's a beautiful verse too. Please teach me the Upanishad. And the teacher says, the Upanishad has been taught to you. Then he says, the Upanishad which reveals Brahman has been fully taught to you. But there's some nice things to say about that. Beautiful.
Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.